Thanks to Gordon Novell for the first 2 hours of tonight's show. Interesting conversation with Gordon. We're shifting gears now. If you remember this story, back in 2002, a young Briton named Gary McKinnon, with an interest in UFOs and those kinds of stories, decided to try to hack into U.S. government computers. And lo and behold, he was as surprised as anyone to find out that he could get in. Says he discovered all kinds of interesting, intriguing information about secret space programs and other details. And suddenly there was a knock on the door. The U.S. government came calling, and Gary was arrested. Since 2005, he's been fighting extradition. Our government wants to put him away for up to 70 years. You could make the argument that what he did was a form of espionage, and he deserves to be punished, deserves to be made an example of. You could also make the argument that maybe he did us a favor by showing our government that the computers that they thought were so well protected were not, in fact, very well protected, and even someone as unsophisticated as Gary could break in and download information. His mother, Janice Sharp, is our guest for the rest of tonight's program. She's been through this story with her son, has been sort of rallying the troops to fight the extradition. And when we come back after this break, we'll be talking with her live from London. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Knapp. I'm joined now via phone from London, by Janice Sharp. She's a singer, songwriter, and filmmaker, perhaps best known, though, as the mother of Gary McKinnon. She's sort of been his chief cheerleader and doing her best to keep him out of jail, making her first appearance on Coast to Coast. Janice, thanks for joining us.
Hello, thank you.
Janice, am I overstating it to say that this is your story as much as it is Gary's? I mean, you had a thriving career, hopes for the future, and pretty much everything had to go on hold when you got that knock on the door, right?
Absolutely, yeah. We've been fighting for Gary for the past 8 years, but especially the past 5 years.
Can you take us back in time and tell us what it was like back then? I mean, as he's hacking into these computers, did he tell you? Did he say, "Hey, Mom, I broke into these computers, and wait till you hear what I found"?
Absolutely not. I would have gone ballistic. Absolutely not. I mean, the first we heard of it was in 2002 in March, and Gary rang us and said that the high-tech crime unit had arrested him, and he was told he would get 6 months community service. That's the British high-tech crime unit. He had admitted to computer misuse with no lawyer, without a lawyer being present, and I was annoyed at that. But Gary is very naive. He's young for his age. He's actually got Asperger's syndrome, and he tells the truth even to his own detriment. So when he told us that he had said this without a lawyer, I was incredibly upset. But he trusted the police, trusted the high-tech crime unit. They actually wanted to prosecute Gary because it was an open-and-shut case. And then the CPS and Crown Prosecution Service were told from the very top to stand aside, to let America take Gary. And that's when our nightmare began, really.
Do you happen to know the details of his arrest? I mean, did they come storming into his house with guns drawn, or did they just, was it a kind of a polite pickup?
Well, we don't have guns here, the
Okay.
police that come in with guns, but what happened was he was in bed, and yeah, there was a knock on the door, and suddenly, the police came in, and he was actually had been asleep, so it was quite scary for him. But when they were actually down at the police station, they were quite pleasant to him. They said they had been monitoring the computers for a few months, and that he was looking, he hadn't done any deliberate damage, so they were looking at 6 months community service, because in the UK, computer misuse is not looked at as a really serious thing. It's a different mindset. I think in America it's viewed as more serious, and well, obviously because of the sentencing, so that's scary. But Gary was in a dial-up connection 8 years ago, more than 8 years ago, in fact, and in his bedroom, so you wouldn't conceive that he could possibly be able to go into the Pentagon. He found out there was no passwords and no firewalls on thousands of machines, and he left cyber notes all over saying, "Your security is awful. There's no security." And he's quite alarmed by this.
And you said the British authorities had been monitoring this, that they knew for a while that he was breaking into these computers?
No, the Americans, Gary had gone into a couple of universities in America, and it was one of the people in the university that told the American authorities, because even though Gary had left notes all over the place, which they've acknowledged, saying that they had the security was awful, no one actually done anything. And it wasn't until the university informed the American military that they then got in touch with the high-tech crime unit in London, and then the high-tech crime unit started monitoring Gary's computers, and they thought that it wasn't a serious thing after they had been monitoring them, and he would get 6 months community service.
And Janice, am I correct in saying that Gary didn't have any especially advanced computer skills?
No, he didn't. Gary, he got one O-level at school, but he is actually very intelligent, but he didn't have any special... I mean, he had worked for a company where he would help people through problems with computers, basic problems, and the boss of the company said that he was unremarkable in his knowledge. He wasn't dreadful. He obviously understands computers, but he was unremarkable. But as I say, there was actually no firewalls or passwords and thousands of machines, and that shocked Gary.
I'm very interested to hear what he told you when you had the conversation after the shock wore off. Hey, Mom, I've been arrested. So then you have an opportunity at some point, I guess, to sit down face-to-face with him and say, hey, what did you do? Can you relate for the audience what it is he told you?
Well, Gary has always been a UFO fanatic. I mean, since he was very young, and he joined the British UFO Society, and he believed that the government had reverse engineered spacecraft, captured spacecraft, and he believed that they had knowledge of anti-gravity, free energy, things like that. And he believed that, like, there was people in this country dying of cold at one point, old people, because they couldn't afford fuel bills and so on. And he believed that there was no need for anyone to die by being cold and lack of money, that basically the governments were suppressing free energy in favor of the electricity companies and so on. And that was his sort of passion. He felt he was on a moral crusade. That's what he told me. He actually thought he was in a moral crusade.
Where did the UFO interest come from? Is that something that you had been interested in or other members of his family?
Yeah, his stepdad was very interested. I mean, Gary's very unusual. And I don't know if you know about Asperger's syndrome, but when he was 2 years old, he used to talk about the planets and the stars and ask me all sorts of questions. And it's very unusual for a two-year-old to ask sort of in-depth things that I couldn't even answer about the planets and the stars. His stepfather, who has been his stepfather since he was 6 years old, loved science fiction. He also came from Bonnybridge, which is a place in Scotland, which has got one of the highest UFO sightings. So that would have increased Gary's interest in UFOs.
Okay. Well, take me through it step by step. When you finally have a conversation with him face to face about what he had done and what information he'd obtained, where were you when that happened?
In our own house.
And what did he tell you? Take it through it step by step. What computers he got into and what he found in each of those computers?
Well, he had gone into NASA. I can't tell you which one was on which, because he actually didn't know what computers he was actually going into. He knew he was trying to find out this information. He knew it was government computers, but he had the IP addresses, but he didn't actually know which ones he was actually into at the time until he actually got there. But he said that he found information on our space fleet, and it actually told you the names of I can't remember the name of it now.
Like astronauts.
The names of the officers on the space fleet, and this hadn't been mentioned anywhere else. And he also said that he saw a UFO that had been airbrushed. He said there was no seams. There was absolutely nothing. He absolutely swears it was a UFO. He swears it, and that there was a space fleet that the government were using. And this is what absolutely fascinated him. And he also couldn't believe his luck that he was actually able to see this. He couldn't believe it. Some of the things he didn't know what he was seeing, there was a place he described, and after a long time afterwards, he had an interview with a lady, an American woman, called Linda Moulton. How is it?
Linda Howe, sure. We know her well.
And she said it was, what was it? China or something that he'd actually been seeing. She knew exactly what he had been seeing. He didn't know, that she actually recognized by the description what he had actually been looking at.
So eventually he learns that he'd been in NASA computers. Is that where he learned about the secret space program?
Yeah, I believe it was. Yep. I believe that's where he learned that.
Did you believe this stuff, that he's that it was real?
I know Gary tells the truth, and I know that he believes it was a UFO. But all a UFO is an unidentified flying object. What it is isn't clear, but it's obviously something that was extremely advanced. He's very, very truthful, as I say, even to his own detriment. So, yeah, I believe Gary. What it actually was, I don't know. If he was mistaken in what it was, I have no idea. I mean, I can only tell you, you know, what Gary says.
Did he download or copy any of this stuff, print it out, so he'd have a record to back up what he had seen?
Well, he was on a dial-up connection, and if you've ever tried a dial-up connection, you know how incredibly slow it is. And this is 8 years ago. So when he actually tried to download the photograph of the spacecraft, it actually went off before he could finish downloading it. And because... Well, you know what a dial-up connection is like. It's impossible,
sure.
Really, isn't it? You can't really do it.
But basically, the claims that he has made about the information he uncovered, we have to believe him. There's no backup to prove it.
No, there isn't. I mean, there isn't any backup. They know that he was looking for UFOs because when they arrested him, it was on his computers. All the UFO thing was in his favorites, and it was all over it, basically. So they know that's the case. But I mean, basically, it's Gary's word. I mean, what he's describing, other people in America seem to be more aware of what it is than Gary, because there was a woman there who worked for NASA who had spoken about similar things, and I think Gary had seen more of that.
Was there a point, I'm trying to remember the story from reading it a couple of years ago, was there a point where he was sort of caught while he was online, that somebody came on and said, hey, who are you? What are you doing?
Yeah, that's what he says, yeah, that somebody had asked something. There was. And there was also, when he was trying to download something, he got mixed up with the time zones in America and the UK, and I think that's why the person in the university, how they knew that there was someone on the military. I don't know how the university actually know. I think they have connections with the military.
Sure. Yeah. Do you know what was the period of time that he was doing this? Was it over days or weeks?
Oh, I think it was over probably about a year, I'd imagine. I'm not really sure, but maybe 6 months to a year.
So
like
6 months to a year, and he kept doing it and leaving messages, and no one essentially caught him or tried to stop him.
No, that's what he couldn't understand. He left lots and lots of messages saying that the security is non-existent. You've got no passwords and firewalls. Gary also said there was people from all over the world on there. He said, apparently you can do a sort of command and it shows what other people are on there. And he said there was people from Russia and China and all over the place on there. So he was incredibly alarmed. He thought, well, this is just ridiculous. How on earth can there be no firewalls or passwords? So he kept leaving messages. Then also, this is another aspect altogether, but after 9/11, we were in the house, we saw it happen on the television, and we cried, we thought it was awful. But Gary believes in lots of, you can call them conspiracy theories, or you can believe them, whatever, but he believes in lots of conspiracy theories, and he got it into his head that, rightly or wrongly, I'm just telling you what Gary thought, he got it into his head it was an inside job. And he did the most stupid thing in the world. He left cyber notes because they had no passwords and firewalls. He decided all sorts of things, and he left messages saying that they were guilty of state-sponsored terrorism, and he believed that it was a no accident, it was a stand-down after 9/11. The most stupid thing in the world to do, and I'm sure that this is part of the reason that Gary has been sort of pursued to the lengths he is, because not only did he embarrass them by finding out that there was no security, but he also left these terrible cyber notes.
Sort of rubbing their nose in it.
Yeah, I mean, I just couldn't believe it, you know, when he told me this. I mean, even now I think, how stupid, how stupid. But it was like a cyber peace protest. And initially it was a whistleblower. He kept saying, "You've got no security, you've got no security." And it was a crazy thing to do. But to me, it does not, to have extradition alone is a terrible thing. It's different in America because you're quite used to taking people from state to state. Whereas here, Gary doesn't leave North London. He never actually goes anywhere. He doesn't travel abroad. And for him to actually be extradited would be horrendous. He doesn't leave his family. It's that thing in itself would be a huge punishment to Gary. And also, when he was first, he was offered a plea bargain initially of, I think it was 1.5 to 2 years. And he says, can it be guaranteed? And they said, no. So he refused the plea bargain. And they said, well, if you don't accept, they told his lawyers that we'll prosecute you to the max. And one state wanted to see you fry. And this petrified us. So we've been fighting like crazy ever since, because I'm terrified of Gary being taken from London. Terrified.
Well, we definitely want to focus on the extradition process and what you've been through, and we'll do that in the second half of this hour. But before this break, I wanted to ask, if did Gary attempt to break in any British government computers?
No, I don't think he could have. To be honest, I don't think he could. I'm not sure, but I know that quite a lot of the governments have internet that isn't on the public highway. Some of them have an internet that's enclosed, so I don't think you can. He tried this. I don't think he even believed he would actually be able to get there, and that's what shocked him, that he was able. He still can't understand it, and I can. But Robert Gates said that there's thousands of intrusions every month, apparently. And I think Obama now, which is to me quite sensible, is actually going to hire hackers for the security, because there was a woman in the army who said that she actually, in the American army, who said she needed people like Gary, because what she was fed up with was getting military people that she had to train up rather than getting IT people. And I think Obama's got the right idea, that he's actually getting IT hackers to actually oversee the security. It makes much more sense, because you can't really train someone up to do that. You either have a sort of aptitude for it or you don't, I think.
Well, I think Gary has proven that he could be useful in teaching him how to do that, although I wouldn't count on him being hired. I think you're probably pretty mad at him, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. You know, I'd be terrified of him going anywhere. It just so silly. It was, what he did was silly, and what we've been fighting for is not for him to be avoid responsibility, but to be tried in this country. No other hacker in the world has ever been extradited, ever, for computer misuse. And it just, I'm so annoyed that Gary actually, without having a lawyer, admitted to it. But I know what he's like. He is honest. He's very trusting. But I'm very annoyed at it, because, not annoyed, I'm upset at it, to be honest. Because,
well,
that's,
I know
how
that
he ended up in this position.
If it had happened in this country, I know there are similarities in our legal systems and also great differences, but if it had happened in this country, he makes a confession without a lawyer being present. I don't know if he was informed of his rights or if you even have the Miranda protections that we do, but if he had done that here, I would think that confession would be tossed out. Or at least you could make an argument. One other question before we go to the break. Did Gary ever mention any plans to go public with the information, tell you afterward, hey, Mom, I uncovered all this stuff. I really want the public to know about it. I'm going to take it to the newspapers, or anything of that sort?
No, Gary did want people to know, because he's always believed that the free energy could basically benefit the world, and people that couldn't afford it would have this energy. It would help with global warming, climate change, the whole thing. But I actually said, don't speak about it. If we keep a low profile, if we don't say anything, it might go away. That was basically what I thought. If we just don't say anything about it, and we don't embarrass anyone, the whole thing, they might just say, well, this is silly, and drop it. That was our hope.
Unfortunately, that's not the case. We're talking with Janice Sharp about the Gary McKinnon case. When we come back, we'll get into the extradition fight. Beautiful song from Don McLean, taking us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Janice Sharp about the Gary McKinnon case, and Janice is an accomplished musician, singer, songwriter in her own right. Because of her contacts in the music industry, she's been able to call on some of her friends to help keep Gary McKinnon out of an American prison. On our website, the Coast to Coast website, there's a link to a song, a music video put together with Janice's help, starring people like David Gilmour of Pink Floyd, Chrissy Hynde of The Pretenders, Bob Geldof, and Gary McKinnon himself. If you want to check that out, we'll be coming back to talk about the extradition process and a hint, a ray, a sliver of good news that popped up this week. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're talking with Janice Sharp, the mother of Gary McKinnon, the British hacker who uncovered all sorts of interesting things in American government computers. Janice, walk me through the process on this extradition fight. Now, at some point, as you mentioned, you thought it was going to be okay. It was going to get 6 months and there wouldn't be a whole lot of trouble. And then somebody from the American government sort of upped the ante and upped the stakes. What year did that happen? Was that 2002?
Well, in 2002, America government indicted Gary and put an arrest warrant. And had they actually applied for the extradition then, they would have had to have a prima facie case, which means they would have to have actually provided evidence. And so what happened is they didn't actually request the extradition. They waited until late 2004 before actually applying to the UK for the extradition. And the reason seems to be because during that time, Britain signed an extradition treaty with America, whereas America can now extradite any British citizen by providing no evidence whatsoever. Whereas if we want to extradite an American person, we have to provide probable cause, which means that it's evidence that can be contested prior to someone being extradited. So it's a safeguard. And what our government says, I mean, I feel our government have completely sold us out on this. What they said was that it's almost equal. It's as close as we can get because America's constitution protects them. Well, what protects us? You know, it's ridiculous. Why on earth can't we have equal rights? And every sort of decent American would want Britain to have equal rights. I mean, Jerry Pippin is an incredible supporter of Gary. And he's always stood up for Gary from the very start. And I know how many sort of good people over there are supportive, but to my mind, our government sold us out. And not only, we were told that this treaty was to be for terrorists, and it was signed in secret, and the British Parliament didn't even see the text of the extradition treaty until 3 months after it was signed. It was signed under the Queen's prerogative, and that way they could get it in secret. And this seems so undemocratic. And rather than being used for terrorists, what's happening is they're also extraditing a 67-year-old man with cancer for price fixing. But at the time, price fixing wasn't a crime in this country. And the House of Lords ruled it wasn't a crime. But then the American government is still trying to get him because they said it was obstruction of justice by having a meeting about the crime that wasn't a crime. And the actual terrorists here are people who seem more like terrorists. They don't get extradited because if they go to the European Court of Human Rights, they say, well, it's against their human rights. So to me, the bad people are not being taken, and white-collar workers or IT people, in Gary's case, are being extradited. It seems totally upside down, and there's a huge sort of backlash against the British government for doing this because why? Why would any government that's voted in to protect and uphold our rights, sign the treaty, which has given our rights away? It's unbelievable.
How many courts have you been to? I know that I have read so many updates on the case. Every couple of months you've gone to fight it at a different level, and always, at least until this week, the results have been disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, we have been through the High Court. We also went to the House of Lords, and there, the person who made the decision was Lord Brown, and Lord Brown works for the intelligence, worked with the intelligence, so to me it was the wrong person to make that decision. And what they said at the time was to justify that Gary could get a long sentence if he went to America was, well, feasibly he could be done under aviation and maritime in the UK, and that would carry a long sentence. But at the last court hearing, we actually managed to get, with a huge fight, disclosure from the Crown Prosecution Service. And on it, they had written, no evidence, hearsay. So there was actually no evidence. And when someone mentioned that Gary could be tried under the aviation and maritime feasibly, the judge himself said, and pigs might fly. And the judge actually admitted that what Gary had done was much less serious than other hackers who have not only not been extradited, but not been sentenced. So he said, well, in that case, Gary could go over to America and he'd be straight back. And if QC, who's the Queen's Counsel, the barrister, said that that's not what would happen because it's getting blown up out of proportion. And so that's our fear. The whole thing is just getting blown out of proportion. And Gary is gentle to the core. He's the last person to me that should be, well, obviously I'm his mother, but I mean, not only me, so many people, even politicians from all the different parties, believe that Gary should not be extradited. The only people who seem intent in doing it is the very core of the cabinet in our government, the Prime Minister, the Home Secretary and the Foreign Secretary. And Hillary Clinton is actually coming over here at the end of this month. And I really would love to speak to her or have someone actually let her know the real facts of this situation. And as I've said all along, I'm sure that Obama does not want the first person ever extradited for computer misuse to be a UFO guy with Asperger's syndrome. It doesn't make sense. It looks bad for our government. It looks bad for the American government. And it makes a mockery of that it's supposedly for terrorists when they're actually using this. It's a one-sided treaty for people who are furthest thing from that.
It would seem that if our government was truly embarrassed by this, that embarrassed that it was so easy to hack into these computers, that they didn't have even the basic safeguards there, that extraditing a UFO guy and making a gigantic cause out of it, drawing this much attention to it, would be a further embarrassment.
Well, that's what I would think. And also, it was all done under the Bush era. And to me, Obama's there now. This is a different era. And I just think, I thought once Obama was in, we were fine. But obviously, he's so incredibly busy. How is he going to get to hear about Gary? And that's actually one of the reasons that I got people to help to make this song, because I thought if people are of that stature, the song is actually for Obama. It's a plea to Obama. I've altered the lyrics of the song with Graham Nash's permission, and it's actually a direct plea, come and help us, please stand up for our lives, and that's what it is. And
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
I'm hoping that he can get to hear about it, basically.
Tell me about putting these celebrities, these major stars together to do this song. We've got the link on our website. I hope Coast to Coast listeners will check it out. That's an amazing accomplishment by itself.
Well, it was huge. It took an enormous effort. I mean, basically, because we're musicians, I knew David Gilmour's brother-in-law. I don't know David Gilmour, but I knew his brother-in-law. And I told him, and he hadn't even realized it was Gary, because he hadn't seen Gary since he was quite young. And he was amazed, and he told his brother-in-law, and they spoke about it. And David Gilmour was a really good guy. I mean, he sold one of his houses in London, and he gave $5 million to the charity for homeless people. He's a really good person. And I knew, probably because we're musicians, and I didn't know where to turn for help. And I always feel that musicians have traditionally, when there's a strong case for justice, they will stand up. They will sort of stand up and say, look, this is wrong. So I sort of believed in the honesty and the forthrightness of musicians. So David Gilmour, he was going on holiday with his family, and that night we did the backing track and we emailed it to him, and that night he put on the vocal. He stayed and did it before he actually flew off, and I think that was so amazing of him to do that. I just
yeah.
So thankful. And after that, I phoned up Bob Geldof's people, and that was a lot of work. Actually getting through to Bob Geldof was incredibly difficult, but eventually got through to Bob Geldof. And then David Gilmour got in touch with Chrissy Hynde, and she did it, and she's brilliant. I mean, Chrissy Hynde's absolutely brilliant. So they did it, and I was so pleased because I felt, and Graham Nash, when we got in touch, and I asked, the song is Chicago, which was used during the 1960s when there was all the problems going on in Chicago. And it was a sort of a protest song. It was a plea for help, come to Chicago and look at the injustice. And I asked, could I actually alter the lyrics? And he allowed me to, which was also amazing. so that it was a direct plea to Obama.
Well, you know, what we don't understand here in America, and what you can help us understand, is how big of a cause, how big of an issue it is there in your country. Because, you know, we hear about it occasionally on the Coast to Coast show. And once in a while, once in a great while, there's a tiny update in a newspaper. But really, the American public doesn't hear much about this at all. How much does the British public hear about it? How much of it is on the tips of their tongues?
It's huge over here, absolutely huge. I mean, every politician from all the politicians from all the different parties have all come out in favor of Gary. It's on television. I've been on television so many times. And it's odd because although I'm a musician, I think like many, I'm actually quite shy. And suddenly I'm actually on all these TV programs that we talk about this constantly. And it is so strange. It's the last thing I would have wanted to do. But yeah, it's just, it's in all the newspapers. It was on the front page of the newspapers often, of very sort of big national newspapers. It's all over the place. Because people here are very upset about Gary because they think, why are the bad people not going? And why is it that basically it's people who they see as harmless that this is happening to? Also about the one-sided extradition treaty, they want it changed and they're fighting for it to be changed because they feel this is a betrayal. I actually wrote to the Queen as well because although it was signed under the Queen's prerogative, it was done by a politician who does that on her behalf, and I don't believe that she would knowingly have signed away the rights of all her citizens because even this wouldn't look good going down in history. The whole thing, it's like living in a surreal nightmare. It's so weird. You know, people say I'm bored, and I think, God, I would love to have a boring life at this point in time. I really would.
Well, Janice, I know you're shy and that you're uncomfortable in these kind of situations. We really thank you for coming on here and talking about this. You're doing a great job here so far.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the Queen for a second. I was wondering about Buckingham Palace. Would this be, is this big enough of a story there to have come to Her Majesty's attention?
Well, yeah, first of all, the Prime Minister's wife, one day I was in the house and the phone went and they said, this is number 10 Downing Street. And do you know you're having tea with the Prime Minister's wife tomorrow? And I said, well, no. And so that was quite incredible. And she is sympathetic. And it seems so absurd that the Prime Minister's wife, Sarah Brown, is sympathetic, but her husband is not stopping the extradition. And then something else happened. We started getting death threats, and so did all the journalists who speak up for Gary. I haven't actually spoken about this anywhere, really. But all the journalists and politicians have been getting death threats. And we had detectives here, and they were talking about it, and we told them about the number 10 and so on. They asked about me meeting Sarah Brown. And that night, we were going to bed, and we always take the mobile phone up with us, and we looked on it, and Buckingham Palace had called. And it was just so surreal again. And the next morning, we rang back. They had left the direct line. I had actually sent a letter of 4 pages, but initially I just wrote a letter about Gary and I tried to be very respectful and I didn't really say much about the political thing, but then someone looked at it and said, that's not you, Janice, write it as you would. So I wrote the whole political thing and how wrong it was and even that I thought it was wrong for it to be signed under the Queen's prerogative, and I was quite it was quite hard-hitting. And but also I explained about Gary, what kind of person he was, how gentle he was. And when the palace phoned, they said they thought it was a lovely letter and a really good letter. So that was a relief. And the Queen publicly can't do anything. She's not allowed to do anything. And she said that basically she takes, we got a letter from her, advice from her ministers. But a few days later, a judge came out with a judgment that is the best we've heard for a while because they've allowed us to judicially review the decision of the Home Secretary to extradite Gary. And not only that, it's a very senior judge. He's not known as a liberal. He's very hard line. But the way he's written this, the barrister was extremely surprised because a senior judge never writes things in quite this way. And he said that realising Gary's mental health, because Gary's mental health deteriorated massively, because if you're actually in a heightened state of stress every waking moment of every day for almost 8 years, It's horrendous, and we wouldn't actually let an animal live in a heightened state of stress for this length of time. And the judge said that because of the deterioration, that if it is this way, that basically what the Home Secretary has ruled could be against the law and unlawful. So that's our big hope, is that the judge at the judicial review will decide that it was unlawful. That's our hope.
Okay, so the Home Secretary is the one to allow the extradition to proceed, and this High Court, this judge, says, no, hold on here, we need to review this. Would this court have the power to overturn the Home Secretary's? Oh,
yeah.
Well, maybe a conservative, hardline judge is exactly what you need, somebody who interprets the law strictly and will defend Gary's rights.
Maybe that's it, exactly. And also, we have an election. It's got to be an election by May at the latest. And that also will probably mean a change of government. And the other parties have said, one of them, the Liberals, have said absolutely they will not extradite Gary under any circumstances. And the Conservatives have said that they will change the law so that any crime that is committed in Britain, if the person is physically in Britain, will be tried in Britain. They won't be extradited. Only if the person's actually been in the other country and committed the crime. Because extradition was meant to take people from a country that fled. If they fled from the crime, they're brought back. It wasn't meant to take you from the country you're in if you've never been in the other country. And it's never really been debated, this thing about computers, of where you actually are. People, they say, well, although he was physically in this country, America's government said that he was there. But if people in Britain or in America on holiday, for example, online gambling is against the law. So if they put on the lottery in America for Britain, if they win, they're not allowed to claim the winnings. So therefore, America is saying that the crime has taken place at keyboard level in America. Well, they should surely then have to apply the same, that if Gary was in the UK, the crime should be at keyboard level in the UK. You can't have it both ways. When it suits me, it will be the keyboard level, and if it doesn't, it will be, you know, for where you happen to be on.
Janice,
clear.
Yes, you did. You're doing great. We're going to take a break in a second here, Janice. When you hear the music coming up in your ear, it means we're going to the break. But I want to try to slip one more question in. You're his mom, so obviously you have an opinion that is biased because you loved your son. But I wonder if there is evidence about what would happen to him physically if he were to be extradited and perhaps serve a long prison sentence over here.
Gary wouldn't survive. I mean, I get quite emotional at this, but he wouldn't. Gary is gentle to the core. He really is. He's so gentle, and he would not survive in one of those hardline prisons. He just wouldn't. I mean, you hear about stun guns and male rape and all sorts of things. It terrifies me. I just would not survive in a place like that. That's my fear. I mean, in the UK, for computer crime, you're put in an open prison, and an open prison is a... you're not in with hardened criminals. It's a different thing. But because if you're in America, if you're British, you're put into a very high secure prison. It's not an open prison because you're considered a flight risk. And that's terrifying to me.
And from what I've read, he could face up to 70 years in an American prison. We're talking with Janice Sharp, mother of Gary McKinnon. Couple more questions from me when we come back after the break, and then we're opening up the phone lines for your conversations with Janice Sharp. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM.